This is Radio Superior 1959, a reproduction of actual news events with authentic popular music from the 1950s. This is a true story of our past. So step back with us to another time. We bring you now inside the KUWS radio studios and the Tim Michaels Dance Party.
Now turn around, baby. Let's go once more.
Hi-ho! Hi-ho! It's your old fuddy-duddy buddy on a bearskin rug, Tim Michaels here. Hey, you guys, dolls, cats, and kittens, we are here to rock your world on a Saturday night. A radioactive Saturday, June 27th. 1959. Danny Anderson has the 6 o'clock news. What's this I hear about you being a wet rag about the one-armed bandit driving?
One-armed driving is an alarming safety issue. It's out of hand.
So to speak. Cool Cal has the sports, and heavyweight champ Floyd Patterson got one knuckle sandwich too many, and Machine Gun Kelly is at the playgrounds with some lame reports.
I hear Floyd Patterson got one heck of a knuckle sandwich.
I already said that, man.
Sorry, cuz. Hey, lots of summertime stuff out at the playground.
It sounds like he's got another good chance of landing in jail.
The heat better not lean on me tonight, man. I got some plans to cruise with Crazy Katie, you know? A little one-arm driving, dig?
He's not hearing us too well.
That's a big 10-4. That's why I said his reports are lame-o, and I'm not worried about getting pounded. Denny's news comes to you from the Tavern Owners Association of Superior. Wild, man. All right, it's all yours there, Big D.A.
It's a political issue. Very legit.
Crazy.
Atomic spy Klaus Fuchs is released from a British prison. The steelworkers agree to return to 11th-hour talks. And Queen Elizabeth christens the new St. Lawrence Seaway. We begin our world report from Britain.
This is Harold E. Brown in London. After only 9 years in prison, Klaus Fuchs, the German-born Los Alamos scientist whose espionage helped the USSR build their first atomic and hydrogen bombs, was released from a British prison this week. Fuchs immediately left Britain for communist East Germany, where he will resume his scientific career. As a student in pre-war Germany, Fuchs joined the German Communist Party in 1930, but in 1934 was forced to flee after Nazi leader Adolf Hitler came to power. Settling in Britain, he became a brilliant young scientist and was recruited by the British military after the outbreak of World War II. Despite his communist past, he was granted security clearance. In 1943, Fuchs was sent with other British scientists to the United States to join the top-secret U.S. atomic program. Eventually stationed at Atomic Development Headquarters in Los Alamos, New Mexico, Fuchs became an important figure in the program. Unbeknownst to anyone at Los Alamos, he made contact with a Soviet spy and offered precise information about the program, including a blueprint of the Fat Man atomic bomb later dropped on Nagasaki, and everything that the Los Alamos scientists knew about the hypothesized hydrogen bomb. After the war, Fuchs returned to England, where he continued his atomic work and Soviet espionage until December 21, 1949. When a British intelligence officer informed the physicist that he was suspected of having given classified nuclear weapons information to the USSR. The discovery of Fuchs's espionage came 4 months after the Soviet Union successfully detonated its first atomic bomb. Fuchs pleaded guilty and on March 1, 1950, after a 2-hour trial, was convicted. By British law, he could be sentenced to only 14 years in prison because the USSR was not an official British enemy at the time of his arrest. After 9 years, he is released from prison for good behavior. The revelation of Fuchs's espionage was a major factor leading to President Harry Truman's approval of massive funding for the development of the hydrogen bomb, a weapon theorized to be hundreds of times more powerful than the atomic bombs dropped on Japan. The first U.S. hydrogen bomb was successfully detonated in 1952. 3 years later, the Soviet Union detonated its first hydrogen bomb. In London, this is Harold E. Brown.
This is Jack Bell in New York. The Steelworkers Union agreed today to resume contract negotiations. However, Union President David McDonald says, quote, "I'm not going to get in another filibuster session," unquote, and said he would walk out again if the industry continues to refuse to grant worker contract gains. McDonald declined further sessions today with industry reps, saying they had been fruitless. He called for direct talks with steel company top executives, but that bid was flatly rejected. McDonald announced this morning, after a meeting with the union's 33-man executive board, that he would go back into session with the regular industry team, headed by U.S. Steel Corporation Vice President R. Conrad Cooper. In New York, this is Jack Bell.
This is Lyle C. Wilson in Washington. 2.5 years after the Senate Labor Management Committee began investigating him, James Hoffa still promises to drive racketeers from his union. His story is the same. He'll do it in his own good time. Hoffa told the committee today he has the power and authority to do it now, but will not act until the committee ends its investigation. His promise drew a scornful retort from Democratic Senator John F. Kennedy of Massachusetts. Quoting the senator, "I have no hope of your ever cleaning up the union, Mr. Hoffa," end quote. Democratic Chairman John McLennan of Arkansas has charged repeatedly that Hoffa is so hemmed in by mobster allies that he couldn't clean up the union if he wanted to. The committee named a long string of union officials with long criminal records who have pleaded a fifth as witnesses. Their crimes include extortion, murder, and narcotics. Hoffa says he would attend to them in due course, including the president of New York Local 239, who draws his $20,000 a year union salary and expense account while serving a prison term for extortion. Kennedy says they can assume, at least for now, he doesn't have many expenses. In Washington, this is Lyle C. Wilson, UPI.
This is Peter Edson in Washington. With everybody talking politics and nobody doing much about it, two appraisals of the 1960s situation have come to this reporter's attention, which makes more sense than most political gossip heard today. First, the Democratic appraisal. There are 9 candidates in the field. 5 are U.S. Senators: Humphrey of Minnesota, Johnson of Texas, Kennedy of Massachusetts, Estes Kefauver of Tennessee, Stuart Symington of Missouri, to put them in alphabetical order. Finally, there's Adlai Stevenson of Illinois, Democratic standard bearer in 1952 and 1956. He's counted himself out for a third try. Senator Johnson also trying to make like he is not a candidate. But somehow these disavowals are never taken seriously unless put in General Sherman's famous words, "If nominated, I will not run. If elected, I will not serve." This being the situation, the expert sizes it up like this. Senator Kennedy will go into the nominating convention with the most delegates. His vote will not be big enough to put him over on the first ballot. If Kennedy begins to slip, he's through. The thing to watch will be who's next. If Governor Stevenson hasn't eliminated himself, it could be him. If not, maybe Symington. Johnson and Humphrey are discounted. The North won't take the former. The South won't take the latter. Now for the Republican appraisal. Vice President Richard Nixon is way out in front for the GOP nomination. Governor Nelson Rockefeller of New York, his only challenger, is playing it coy. But New York businessmen are down on Rockefeller, considering him a traitor to his class because he raised taxes. In Washington, this is Peter Edson.
This is Jack Murray in Cornwall, Ontario. Queen Elizabeth II today visits what's been called the greatest engineering project in the world. The Royal Yacht Britannia, after sailing through the St. Lawrence Seaway in a symbolic opening with President Eisenhower aboard, headed for Cornwall Messina, New York, where the St. Lawrence Power Project operates. Vice President Richard Nixon and New York Governor Nelson Rockefeller welcomed the Queen and Prince Philip. Ceremonies greeting the royal couple are set for the Eisenhower Lock. Like the Seaway, this electric power generating complex was jointly built by Americans and Canadians. Unlike the Seaway, however, it was brought to reality not by the federal government of the two countries, but by the state of New York and the province of Ontario. Canadians already have shown Elizabeth a number of examples of their swift industrial expansion in the first week of her 45-day Canadian tour. They're getting worldwide publicity via nearly 70 correspondents covering the journey. The St. Lawrence Power Project, though not exclusively Canadian, is one of Canada's most spectacular projects. Former President Herbert Hoover, himself an engineer, termed it, quote, undoubtedly the greatest engineering project in the world. In Cornwall, Ontario, this is Jack Murray.
Hawaiians voted on statehood for the last time today and picked candidates for their first state election a month hence. From all sides came predictions that islanders will give an overwhelming yes to admit the Mid-Pacific island chain as the 50th state. They've been pleading for statehood for half a century. The Hawaii Statehood Commission says its straw vote last week showed 12-1 approval for admission to the union. The commission is confident the Hawaii referendum will top the 5-1 approval voted by Alaska last year. Two new pinup boys took a bow today in the world of men's fashion, Vice President Nixon and President Tito of Yugoslavia. Along with Fred Astaire, Rex Harrison, and Douglas Fairbanks Jr., they are among the 11th best-dressed men of 1959, selected by Taylor & Cutter magazine, British arbiter of masculine elegance. The magazine says, quote, Nixon finds a neat line between the wigwam shape of the U.S. drape and the ludicrously tight togs of U.S. Ivy Leaguers. Tito won a citation because, quote, he is the ritziest dictator in the business. KUWS Radio News Time is 6:08. Tim Michaels has this message from Superior Tavern Owners Association.
There are sound and valid reasons why the city liquor ordinances should be amended to comply with the state statutes. The city of Superior is the only city of comparable population in the state of Wisconsin which prohibits its licensees from remaining open on Sundays. The opening of taverns on Sunday will promote industry for the city of Superior, especially the tourist industry. We will also gain a tremendous amount of Minnesota business. It is inequitable and unjust that the present exception to the Wisconsin statutes remain in the liquor ordinances of the city of Superior because the fact that taverns in Douglas County are allowed to remain open, many of whom are located but a short distance from the city limits. This message from tavern owners of the city of Superior. Back to you, Denny.
The possibility of a steel strike has thousands of area families concerned. KUWS radio newsman Mike Simonson reports.
Literally thousands of people will be part of a strike if it happens next Wednesday. U.S. Steel District Public Relations Director George Zeller has disclosed that no plans have been formulated yet at U.S. Steel's American Steel and Wire Division plant in Morgan Park in Duluth. If no agreement is reached by Monday, it will be necessary to begin the process of an orderly shutdown of the plant's operations. About 85% of the steel plant's 3,200 workers would be affected by a steel strike. And from the Iron Range to the UP, estimates range to 20,000 steel and mine workers in northern Wisconsin, Minnesota, and upper Michigan that could be affected in the event of a strike. And if it does happen and lasts a long time, local businesses will also be hurt, Denny.
Thanks, Mike. One-armed driving is out. Motorists were warned again today by Superior Police Traffic Director Lieutenant Glenn Matthews. Complaints have increased at headquarters. Matthews says violators found guilty can be fined not less than $10 or more than $200 and up to 30 days in jail or both. Lieutenant Matthews says it isn't worth it, even for a car cuddle. Well, a crowd of several thousand will throng to Hayward Sunday for the gigantic Muskie Festival Parade starting at 2 p.m. On a float of honor will be the 1959 Muskie Queen, an attractive Chippewa Indian young lady, Carol LaRocque, who will receive her crown at coronation ceremonies on Saturday night at the ball in the National Guard Armory. A two-mile-long parade consisting of floats, bands, and marching groups from northern Wisconsin and Minnesota will participate. And that's the 6 o'clock news. Good night, everybody, and be kind.
So, you've never been a one-armed bandit driver?
Never. And I've never been in a car crash either.
Huh. I'm going to have to do some contemplating, cats and kittens, but not too much because I don't want to sprain my brain.
I'll give you something to contemplate in a little bit.
That sounds like a threat. The Magic Weather Ball for this summer, Saturday night, June 27th, 1959. Thunder boomers tonight, then warmer, partly sunny, with the Merc topping out at a boss, 75 degrees, baby. Let's take the five keys and Ling Ting Tong from 1955 on the Tim Michaels Dance Party.
I smoke them boot, I ate. I smoke them boot.
I went to Chinatown, way back in old Hong Kong, to get some egg foo young. And then I heard a gong. Ling Ting Tong, had to sing that song called I smoke them boot, I ate. I smoke a boot, Ling Ting Tong, he would never be wrong. I wanna sing your song, Ling Ting Tong. Ling Ting Tong, can you sing that song? Go, I smoke a boot, I ate, I smoke a boot. Ling Ting Tong, he would never be wrong. Go on and sing your song.
some more kaboom, die, tie some more kaboom.
From Capitol Records, the Five Keys and Ling Ting Tong on Kickin' KUWS. The Tong hit number 5 in the R&B charts in 1955. Cruise to Bob's Frost Top Drive-In. Bob's Burgers and Dogs and Chocolate Shakes for 19 cents. Bob's Frost Top Drive-In at 2117 East 2nd Street in Superior. Hey, 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 check out the Palace tonight. They've got a sizzler with Marilyn Monroe, hada, 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 Tony Curtis and Jack Lemmon and Some Like It Hot. Movie time, 7:15 to 9:30. Nothing like a Saturday night at the Palace after grabbing some chow at Bob's Frosttop.
Ma and Pa Kettle is playing at the Beacon. That's a sequel to The Egg and I with Fred McMurray. He's not in this one, but Marjorie Main and Percy Kilbride are Ma and Pa.
I am seriously worried about you, Daddy-O. Marjorie Main can't stack up to Marilyn Monroe, if you know what I mean. First, you don't like one-arm cruising, and now it's Ma and Pa Kettle. That's just not Jake Clyde.
That's Denny. And I'll give you the works a little later on about it. You'll be a believer.
Converted by a news guy. I can't wait. Machine Gun Kelly's in next from the playground at Wade Bowl. Oh, let me get on my dancing shoes right now. Hold on just one second. I'm ready. Get ready to do those fancy licks from the cream of the crop, from the top of the pots, from the stack of the back of the wax. We're all set to do it with Mr. Chuck Berry. Here is Johnny B. Good on Kickin' KUWS.
See down in Louisiana, close to New Orleans, way back up in the woods among the evergreens. There stood a log cabin made of earth and wood, where lived a country boy named Johnny B. Good, who never ever learned to read or write so well, but he could play a guitar just like a ring in a bell. Go, go!
I had to spin that. It was in my head all day, and I had to let it out. That's last year's Real Gone Rocker from Chess Records, written by Chuck Berry, and all the hot licks on the chops was his axe, courtesy Chuck Berry and Johnny B. Good, number 8 in the 1958 Billboard Hot 100. Machine Gun Kelly's on the horn from Wade Bowl in Central Superior. Hey, cousin, what's buzzing, man?
Man, I thought I'd snap my cap when you were spinning Johnny B. He can wail.
It blew my top, baby. So you're hanging out at a playground, cuz?
Hey, it's summer, and it's the place to be. They've got volleyball and softball, and they're doing a Zell Ball elimination tourney so they can have the best Zell Ballers in town on one team. And don't ask.
What the heck is Zell Ball?
I don't know, man. They got marbles. Danny Sislo won that. He's got the best puries I've ever seen. Mike Cohen won in box hockey. And horseshoes, Don Black won that.
The horse is always losing that game, baby.
That's because I got bare feet. Squaresville, Clyde. Squaresville. Speaking of that, Lenny Hoff won in checkers. And hold your horseshoes, Greg Bashinsky won Zell Ball. Hey, buddy, congrats on the Zell Ball thing.
Thanks. And you are?
Oh, man, this anonymity thing is killing my ego. Machine Gun Kelly at your service. I do the graveyard shift at Kickin' KUWS.
That is when I'm not arrested for doing these remotes.
Geek voice alert gun.
10-4. Just one question, big man. What the blazes is Zell Ball?
It's a crazy game. You got this rubber ball attached to a long cord that dangles from the top of a steel pole. You hit the ball to the guy at the other side of the pole with a paddle that's strapped to your wrist. It's wild.
Sounds dangerous, Amundo.
It's a man's man, manly sport.
Man!
Really weird you don't know what it is, though. All the chicks think I'm boss since I'm the king of Zell Ball here at Wade Bowl.
Get your dances at Hops?
My dance card is full.
Dance card? On that square note, back to you, King Timothy.
You're going to get some Zell Ball lessons here, cuz?
You got it, Clyde. My dance card, whatever that is, has got wallflower written all over it. So Zell Ball it is.
Got to twin spin, big gun.
Later, alligator.
In a while, Croc. This is the onlyest twin spin, guys and dolls, from 1955 to Platters and Only You on the Tim Michaels Zell Ball Bash.
Only you can make all this world seem right. Only you can make the darkness bright. Only you and you alone can thrill me like you do and fill
Flamingos and a KUWS twin spin.
My love must be a kind of blind love. I can't see anyone but you. Are the stars out tonight? I don't know if it's cloudy or bright. Behind
storm, but I can't see a thing in the sky.
With the best slow dance tune at every hop, and I only have eyes for you on our KUWS onlyest twin spin. Cool, Kel, have you ever played Zell Ball?
I got hit by so many Zell Balls that I had to give it up for something safer like hockey.
That paddle attached to the wrist is really gone, man.
I got smoked in the face by my own paddle. It threatened my natural good look.
So, the Zell Ball almost made you an oddball. Now, Cool Kel Sabatini with the sports.
Let's face off, fans. It took Ingemar Johansson less than 7 years to rise from a pathetic, practically disgraced amateur to the heavyweight champ of the world. In the 1952 Olympics in Helsinki, 19-year-old Johansson was paired with American Eddie Sanders in the heavyweight final, but the referee disqualified him for running and refusing to fight. But last night in Yankee Stadium, he stopped Floyd Patterson in the third round and became heavyweight champion of the world. This was rated by experts as one of the most startling upsets in the history of the heavyweight division. Johansson wasn't supposed to have a chance against the hard-punching Patterson. Since winning the heavyweight title from Archie Moore at just 21 years old in 1956, Patterson had gone into the ring 5 times in defense of his crown. They were all knockouts. After the fight had run even for 2 rounds, Johansson came out swinging in the third. He hit Patterson with a right to the forehead, and the champ went down in a heap. The 30,000-odd spectators who braved an early morning rain were not too disturbed. Patterson had been knocked down before and had come back to turn the tables on his opponent. So like a streak of lightning, Johansson's right flashed, and Patterson went down again. 6 times the champ tumbled to the canvas. 6 times he rose wearily to his feet. But the end was in sight from the very first time he was toppled. That was the blow that made him glassy-eyed. The others merely hastened the end. Again for the 7th time, Johansson's right caught Patterson on the head. And for the 7th time in the round, Floyd went down. This time referee Ruby Goldstein droned 1 and decided to end it. He walked over to Johansson and raised the Swede's hand in victory. Johansson is only the 5th fighter born outside the United States to win the world heavyweight title. The others are Max Schmeling, Bob Fitzsimmons, Tommy Burns, and Primo Carnera. Veteran Warren Spahn gave the Chicago Cubs 11 hits last night and then showed them who was the boss by scattering them in the Milwaukee Braves' 11-1 victory. He helped his own cause with his first home run of the season to keep the Braves out in front of the National League by 2 games over the San Francisco Giants and the Los Angeles Dodgers. The 38-year-old Southpaw Mound Ace earned his 10th victory against 8 defeats while his mates were clubbing 4 Chi-Town hurlers for 19 hits, their highest total of the season. Singles by Wes Covington and Joe Adcock and a double by Del Crandall helped the Braves to a 3-run lead in the first inning. The Braves added 3 more in the 4th on singles by Johnny Logan, Spahn, Billy Burton, and Covington. The Green Bay Packers purchased veteran safety Emlyn Tunnell from the New York Giants Tunnell holds the league record for career pass interceptions with 74. He was in Green Bay Friday to talk over terms with new coach and general manager Vince Lombardi. Tunnell was outstanding in the Giants' defense, known as the offense on defense, while Lombardi was defensive coach there. And here's a blast from the past. Ted Werrat of Indiana University has been named Indiana chairman for the National Football Hall of Fame. Werrat was director of athletics at Superior State College from 1930 to 1948. He is meeting this weekend in Chicago with other members of the newly appointed National Football Hall of Fame. This is Cool Cal Sabatini, hoping that all your face-offs are friendly.
Hey there, Cool Cal. You sticking around for Denny's one-armed bandit stuff?
I'm calling it No Lane for Romance.
Wouldn't miss it.
I am jazz for No Lane for Romance.
That's lane with an N.
Whatever. Here are the coasters and searching on the Tim Michaels Two Arms Dance Party. From Atco Records, the Coasters, 1957 Top 10 Hot Wax and Searchin' on Kickin' KUWS. Okay, Daddy-O, time for the word from the bird.
Or this is one man's opinion. I do that once in a while.
One man's one-armed opinion.
When you say love seat, there comes to mind one of those cozy, sawed-off sofas that fit so nicely in cramped corners of the living room. But that's not the big thing these days. The love seat is really the front seat of the car. Now, if you don't believe it, take a good look as you're spinning along the highway. Coming up from behind, you're not sure from the silhouette whether you're seeing one or two people on the front seat in the car ahead. At close range, you make out that it's two, but they're sitting so close you couldn't get a letter opener between them. The guy is usually driving with one hand. The less adept fellow keeps drifting over the center line. So what, you ask? No time to think of safety. He's got a heavy date. You can multiply this little picture by thousands every day. It even shows up on the 60 and 65-mile-an-hour turnpikes. The smoothest lover's lane, that's what those superhighways are. Of course, no highway safety expert is going to propose an anti-love campaign, but he might dare to hint that there is a time and a place, and it's not in the middle of any highway.
Hallelujah!
I see the light. I am a believer.
Man, he makes one-armed cruisers sound like schmucks.
I even feel like watching Ma and Pa Kettle.
Good to see you there, big gun. You didn't get arrested at Wade Bowl?
Officer Callahan told me it's good for me to be at the playground and get fresh air and stuff. Real square.
So you split.
Callahan wanted to play Zellball, so I agitated some gravel out of there.
Which resulted in a high-speed chase.
I'm gray bar bound. I got the snowman to fill in for me tonight. Callahan's good about letting me do that before he locks me up.
On a Saturday night, no less. Boy, what a drag.
Playing checkers with Bubba and the guys at the county jail.
I assume you lose every game.
Guaranteed, man. I don't want to get pounded.
Time to cut out cats and kittens. We will be back same time, same playground, the good Lord willing, and we don't get nailed by a Zell ball. For Denny Anderson, Cool Cal, and Machine Gun Kelly, this is Tim Michaels rocking your world.
You can always park and do the one-arm thing.
No dice, Daddy. Then it's both arms in action.
Wow, newsmen sure are out of it.
You've been listening to Radio Superior 1959. An original production by KUWS Radio and Wisconsin Public Radio. Radio Superior is produced and written by Mike Simonson. Performances for tonight's show are by John Munson and Pat Kelly. All events reported on Radio Superior 1959 are actual accounts from the Superior Evening Telegram and Duluth Herald. This is your announcer, Mark Snow, speaking. Good night.
Information on the release of Klaus Fuchs was from This Day in History on History.com.